The 21st of July, 1861 was a Sunday, and what General McDowell, the Union commanding general, has now decided to do with his army after the 2 days of delay out in Centerville, Virginia, McDowell will now divide his army in half, and what he hopes to do with about 15,000 of his men is he would like to send them on an undetected march that will hopefully take those troops around the left end of the Confederate line posted along Bull Run. Now, once again, the Confederate left, that was in position at the Stone Bridge, still about a mile east of us, and that today is roughly where you see the open field off in the distance. Now, protecting the bridge on the morning of the 21st of July would only be 1,100 Confederate soldiers under the command of Colonel Nathan Evans. Now, what General McDowell will attempt to do with the 15,000 men that I just mentioned, he will send them northward along Bull Run, along the horizon, about 2 miles upstream. There would be an unguarded crossing point known as the Sudley Ford, and there it is hoped that those Union soldiers could cross Bull Run, move around the left of the Confederate line, and then push quickly south toward Manassas Junction, capture the railroads, and then hopefully begin to bring an end to the Civil War. Now, orders are issued to McDowell's men to be up and marching no later than 2:30 a.m. McDowell very much wants to conduct the march under the cover of darkness. Unfortunately, though, for the vast majority of his men, they do not begin the march until about 7 or 7:30 in the morning. So by that time, the sun is already up. The roads that these soldiers would now be utilizing were becoming very dry. So as that Union column is heading north along Bull Run, along the horizon, along with those men heading towards that crossing point, they are also kicking up a large amount of dust, dust which was visible to Confederates in position along the creek as well. In turn, those Confederates are going to send signals up here to Colonel Evans at the bridge, informing him to watch out for his left, that he was now being turned. Well, now that Evans is made aware of the developments on the left of the Confederate Army, he makes a quick decision to now leave behind only 200 of his men to continue guarding the area around the bridge itself. He's now going to move the bulk of his force, about 900, from the Stone Bridge out to a second position on what is known as Matthews Hill. Now, Matthews Hill will be the next field or hill directly north of us. It too is situated about a mile away. That's roughly where you see the ground with the white streaks across it today where we spread some lime. That is where the battle is going to begin about 9:45 in the morning. Now, what Colonel Evans is hoping to do from the position there is at the very least delay the advance of the Union Army. However, within probably a half hour of Colonel Evans arriving at his position on Matthews Hill, he would be facing somewhere between 3,000 to 3,500 Union soldiers. So very quickly, he realizes that without some type of help, without reinforcements, he is not going to be able to hold the ground for long. By 11 o'clock, more Confederates are now arriving on the battlefield. About 2,000 would arrive on Matthews Hill under the command of General Bernard Bee and Colonel Francis Bartow. But even with the arrival of those additional Confederate forces, it would not be enough to delay the Union Army much more than an hour and a half, 2 hours at best. In fact, by 11 o'clock in the morning, the Union Army has virtually all of its 15,000 men now across Bull Run. They are now poised to push southward towards Manassas Junction. By 11:30, most of the Confederate resistance on Matthews Hill is now beginning to dissolve. In fact, most of those troops are retreating very rapidly to positions here atop Henry Hill, where we're standing this morning. And for most of those Confederate troops, as they fall back from the positions on Matthews Hill, it is with the belief that in less than 2 hours' time, they had not just lost the battle here at Manassas, a good portion of them now believe they were in a process of losing the entire war as well. However, as those shattered and demoralized Confederate soldiers from the Matthews Hill fight began arriving here atop Henry Hill, they would encounter some additional Confederate forces heading in the opposite direction. Now, first arriving here on the hill at about 12 o'clock in the afternoon would be five regiments of Virginia infantry, about 2,400 men, led by a brigadier general by the name of Thomas Jonathan Jackson. Now, Jackson and his troops would emerge from the wood line over here to my left, just here to your right. Very quickly, Jackson orders his troops to take positions right along the front edge of the woods, but also down beyond the crest of the hill, which is located right behind the cannon that you see here on the hill today. Now, for Jackson's men, the undertaking of those orders is no doubt without some difficulty. The morning of the 21st of July, Jackson and his command were actually about 5.5 miles downstream when the battle opened up atop Matthews Hill. Jackson, in turn, would march his men to the sound of that fighting, and after using a series of farm roads, as I mentioned, Jackson's troops began to push out onto the field just around noontime. However, according to one soldier, Private Joseph Carpenter of the 27th Virginia Infantry, he said that the men arrived here atop Henry Hill like panting dogs, with their tongues flopping out onto the ground. and that the men were thirsting for water, almost done to death. Well, along with that exhaustion factor, I'm sure many, if not all, of Jackson's men are facing after their march here to the battlefield. As those troops are trying to get into position here along the tree line, they are also having to deal with the Confederates that are retreating back from Matthews Hill. And keep in mind, you know, for those soldiers, they believe that in less than 2 hours' time, they were just not losing the battle here at Manassas. A good portion of those troops believe the entire war has been lost as well. And it's very possible that many of those men are passing close, if not through the ranks of Jackson's men, possibly beginning to shake up or unnerve Jackson's men in the process. Well, if that scene was not enough to unnerve Jackson's men, the next one probably is. Up rides General Bernard Bee. Bee will ride up to Jackson. He personally informs Jackson of the early morning setbacks atop Matthews Hill. And in not so many words, Bee is going to urge Jackson to move himself and his men on for the rear as well. Well, Jackson in reply states, "We will give them the bayonet." Jackson is determined to make some kind of stand here atop Henry Hill. Meanwhile, General Bee, he's going to continue on to the rear with his soldiers, but later on in the afternoon, in an effort to guide his men back into this fight, Bee would point back over to Jackson and his men, shouting, "Yonder stands Jackson like a stone wall. Let us go to his assistance." Now, about the time that Jackson is arriving here on the battlefield, as I said, around 12 o'clock in the afternoon, the battle essentially begins to die down. In fact, for about 2 hours, between about 12 and 2 in the afternoon, according to some of the participants out here, they said there was very little fighting to even speak of. Now, about 12 o'clock, about the same time Jackson was arriving up here atop Henry Hill, General McDowell, he and his staff, they're arriving out on Matthews Hill, and the perspective that McDowell has of the battle, it will be considerably different than what the Confederates have been dealing with all morning long. In fact, for McDowell, by 12 o'clock, he now believes that victory is within the grasp of the Union Army. And indeed so. By 12 o'clock, I think it is very safe to say that, yes, the Union Army has done quite well this morning, even though they had started late on the march. They had pounded the Confederates pretty well atop Matthews Hill. And by 12 o'clock, what McDowell needs to do now is deliver the knockout punch, the driving blow towards Manassas Junction to possibly end the war by the time the sun sets on the 21st of July, 1861. However, much like he had done a couple of days earlier in Centerville, McDowell hesitates yet again. It will not be for the 2 days that he had held his force in the town there, but basically for that two-hour period between 12 and 2 in the afternoon. It is during that time that McDowell's army will halt right at the bottom of the Henry Hill in order to reorganize itself for its push on towards Manassas Junction. During that time, though, that the Union Army is idling after the fighting it had been through atop Matthews Hill, that the Confederates up here along the tree line, they are a beehive of activity. By 2 o'clock in the afternoon, by the time the first Union soldiers arrive here on Henry Hill, the Confederate line will now extend the length of the tree line here to my left, to your right, and almost out to a position stretching across the Manassas-Sudley Road, which would now be Route 234, or the road you would have turned off of here today to reach the Visitor Center parking lot. About 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the first Union soldiers come charging onto the hill. That'll be in the form of some artillery, 6 cannon under the command of Captain James Ricketts. Now, Captain Ricketts would hold ground roughly where you see the guns here to your front left this morning. And when Ricketts is ordered to Henry Hill, he will be ordered up without the support of the infantry, meaning his 6 guns were standing virtually defenseless to the Confederate infantry that is hidden out beyond the crest of the hill. In fact, Captain Ricketts would protest to his superiors that when ordered here to Henry Hill, he felt he was taking his men, his guns, and his horses into a place of great peril. And indeed he was. No sooner can he drop the tails of the guns onto the ground here atop Henry Hill that Ricketts and his men would fall under the fire of Confederates he believed to be posted in and around the home of Mrs. Judith Carter Henry. Site of the 1861 Henry home is now occupied by the two-story white frame house that you see here atop Henry Hill today. The original wartime structure was considerably smaller, standing only 1 1/2 stories. Nonetheless, though, in an effort to remove the supposed Confederates away from the area of the house, Captain Ricketts would now turn some of his guns to face the structure, and he opens fire. Now, one, that will do a very good job of removing any Confederates in the area, but secondly, Ricketts had no way of knowing that sheltered in that house were several civilians, one of which was Mrs. Henry. At the time of the battle, she is in her 85th year, and according to family records, confined to her bed due to the infirmities of age. One of the shells will explode inside the house, close to where Mrs. Henry is located. She is wounded. Later on in the evening, she would die of those wounds, thus becoming the only civilian to lose their life here at the First Battle of Manassas. But for Captain Ricketts, once he had pushed the Confederate threat away from the area of the house, he is now able to turn the full weight of his guns back towards the known Confederate line, where for about an hour, Ricketts opened up between about 2:15 up until about 3 in the afternoon what he believed to be a very heavy and destructive fire onto the heads of the Confederate soldiers. But in reality, since most of the Confederates are actually positioned down beyond the crest of the hill, most of the shells that would be discharged from Captain Ricketts' guns will pass over the heads of the Confederate soldiers and explode harmlessly in the woods behind their lines. Now, meanwhile, as Captain Ricketts continues pounding away at the Confederates, five more guns are directed to Henry Hill under the command of Captain Charles Griffin. Now, Captain Griffin would place his guns roughly where you see the fenced area behind the Henry House today. And from that location there, Griffin has a very good view of the Confederate line. So he now makes a decision to remove two of his guns from behind the house. He'll quickly limber the guns back up to the horses, drive them back down to the bottom of the hill. He'll then swing around behind Captain Ricketts in his position. And what Griffin is hoping to do at the very least is extend the right of Captain Ricketts' line already here on Henry Hill. But better yet, Griffin is going to try to insert himself in a strong position somewhere to the left side of the Confederates. And what we will do now is more or less move with Captain Griffin and his two guns, and we'll see how the second position he would occupy here atop this hill will actually spark the turning point of the battle. And to get a better perspective of that action, we'll just head towards the little stand of trees that I mentioned earlier, and we'll wrap things up right over there.